Welcome to another inspirational message from Hillsong Church, London.
Six p.m. How you feeling? Man, you are the best looking service of all day. You know, they've been telling me all day that, you know, if people are so responsive, you just wait to the 6 o'clock service because that's where the real passionate people come. I'm not sure. I think they were pumping me up, but you know, it sounds like you guys are on fire tonight. So we're going to have a whole lot of fun. Well, I love coming here. I love your pastors, Pastor Gary and Kathy Clark. They mean so much to Lena and I and to so many churches around the world and definitely here in Europe. And we're grateful for what you guys are doing. You guys are plowing away that churches like us can come behind and see great things from the sacrifices that you do. And man, stage looks great. The band is hot and you guys look great. Come on, let's give a hand to the band and let's grab a seat, everybody. All right, well, if I can get my Bible, thank you. That's perfect, thank you. They gave me a pulpit suitable for, I think Gary last service, he was about down here, so I've asked him to bring him up a little bit, so thank you for that. Hey, we're gonna jump into the Word. I don't have a lot of time. I really feel like God has put a word in my heart for today, for you guys, and you know, it's just one of those things where I really want to get in it because I want you to get it. I'm really not here to preach a great message or to impress anybody. I'm really here to help you. And my goal today is to help you move forward in things that God has for you. See, our biggest challenge in life is that we don't realize how much God has for us. I wonder when we get to heaven and we get to discover the potential that was in our life and the potential that God has placed on us, and maybe we see what we did with it, and we look back and we go, man, why did I not realize how much I could do? And I've been thinking about that in my life because we live in a society in Sweden where actually one church a week closed down. There's 200 people a day leaving church. When we started our church, people told me, man, you should start a church anywhere but in Sweden, and especially not in Stockholm. And I'm thinking about, as we grow, we've had some negative media attention and some of that stuff, and it seems to be provoking to think that we can do something that is great and that is big and thousands of people getting together around the name of Jesus Christ, trying to make other people's lives better and lift His name up. And sometimes I'm thinking about, you know, what could be done? You know, I had the privilege to speak in America and in our own home church in Sydney, Australia, and see like they have like 5 billion gazillion people in their church. And I think about Sweden where the average church is 30 people. And I think about, God, could this be done in Sweden? And on my bad days, I'm thinking, man, there's no way we could do this in Sweden. But then I think if God cannot do that in Sweden, He would not be God. Because then He would be limited. And if God is limited, the whole deal is out the window. But because God is without limits, anything He wants to do is possible. That means that when He bring it back to us, it doesn't matter what circumstances you come from. Because it's not about what you are capable of. It's all about what He, without limits, is capable of doing in your life. So if I'm not living to my full potential, there has to be something in the way between what I get out of life and what God can do with my life. And I've narrowed it down in my life to one thing. You want to know what it is? Really? All right. How about the balcony? You want to know it? Oh, like you, man. You're shouting. All the shouters on the balcony. It's about fear. It's a four-letter word that ruins our lives in so many areas. Fear hinders us from becoming everything God has purposed us to be. So I want to talk to you a little bit today. The title for this message is The Fight Before the Fight. But if you really want a title, I would call it in my notes, Breaking Up with Fear. And we're going to get a slow and not too painful break. We're going to have a breakup session. I'm going to teach you all how to break up, man. Some of you guys, man, I'm perfect, man. I need that. I need to get out of this thing, man. I'm going to teach you how to break up. But we're going to talk about not your relationship or your girlfriend or your husband. We're going to talk about fear. If you go to the Old Testament, I have this guy in church. We're trying to make him a pastor. He said, let's go to the First Testament. And we also call it the Old Testament. And the first book of Samuel
chapter 17. And it's a very famous story about David and Goliath. And if you're here today and you're new to church and you don't know much about Bible, or you maybe you're in the church first time, maybe someone told you you're going to a concert and now this guy's talking to you and you don't know what's going on. It's all right, man. You're not going to die. It's going to last for about 30 minutes and then you'll be fine. But you might have heard of David and Goliath, and maybe you even ended up between one of those crazy people who kept waving their arms in worship, banging your head all the time, and you're thinking, what's up with all these crazy people? Well, there are a few crazy people in any room. You put any amount of people together, you get a few nutcases in a room, and not here, but anywhere else. But you think about it, it's not that crazy, really. Like, we're pretty passionate about this. You know, I used to go to the same clubs as you do. I don't get out that much anymore. I got two kids and I just turned 40. I don't feel that young and fresh anymore and stay out that late. I really can't do all-nighters any longer. But you know, I've been in your club. I've been there with you, standing on the table at 2 a.m, taking my shirts off, waving it, dancing like nobody's watching and all that stuff, you know. You know, we're kind of like the same. We're just really passionate about different things. And so if you're here and that crazy, you'll fit right in with us. And so just hold tight. I'm going to talk to you about David and Goliath. If you got your Bibles, let's read from chapter 17, verse 1. It goes like this. I just got to tell you before I start. If you don't understand what I'm saying, it's because I got my own language. It is called Swenglish. It's a mix between Swedish and English. I really didn't do too good in school. So I didn't really learn English as I should. And then I moved to America when I was 20. I find out they only speak English there. No Swedes in America are speaking Swedish. And I thought that was a universal language, but it wasn't. It's a minority who used that language. And I found out I got to learn English. So I found a perfect way to do that. I started to watch action movies. Man, I find myself my own personal English teachers. You know, incredible linguistic people like Steven Seagal. Man, he taught me a lot. I was watching the movies with Swedish subtitles and starting to pair the words together. So if I cuss, man, that's not my fault. I'm just pairing the words together. That's Steven Seagal. You take that up with him. Man, I had some great teachers like Steven Seagal, Arnold Schwarzenegger. His accent was a bit tough, man. I'm trying to be American and I listen to him. Jean-Claude Van Damme, man, he was awesome, man. He was like trying to pair those words, you know. And so that's how I learned my English. So if you don't understand it, just go watch the Steven Seagal movie and you'll find out exactly what I was trying to say. You ready for the word?
Yes.
You feeling good?
Yes.
Here we go. Now the Philistines gathered their forces for war and assembled at Soko in Judah. They pitched camp at Ephes Damim between Soko and Azekah. Saul and the Israelites assembled and camped in the valley of Elah and drew out their battle lines to meet the Philistines. The Philistines occupied one hill and the Israelites another, with a valley between them. A champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, came out of the Philistine camp. His height was 6 cubits and a span. If anyone knows what that is, you know way too much. He had a bronze helmet on his head and wore a coat of scale of armor of bronze, weighing 5,000 shekels. On his legs, he wore bronze greaves, and a bronze javelin was slung on his back. His spear shaft was like a weaver's rod, and its iron point weighed 600 shekels. His shield bearers went ahead of him. Goliath stood up and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine, and are you not the servants of Saul? Choose a man and have him come down to me. If he's able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects." That means we'll become your slaves. "If I overcome him and kill him, you will become our slaves and serve us." Then the Philistine said, "This day I defy the armies of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other." On hearing the Philistine's word, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. Goliath, he wasn't only wearing a whole lot of crazy stuff that no one really knows what it is. He was also a first-class trash talker. Like, he was so good. You ever seen like American wrestling, like this WWF, you know, like this greased in steroid guys with way too small shorts, like talking trash to each other, then pretend they fight, you know, like he's like that. He's like this steroid guy pumped up, juiced up, all on substance, and he's standing there. The Philistines are on one hill, and it's a valley between them, and on the other hill is the Israelites. The one guy from the Philistine camp comes down to the valley and challenges the Israel guys and say, if you come down, just send one man. There's no need for everybody to die today. Just send one man down, and we'll fight, and whoever wins are the winner. The losers becomes the other one's slaves. But he's so good, and he's so intimidating, and he's so threatful in the way he does it. So what happens is he projects so much fear to the Israelites that they are paralyzed by the fears. They no one wants to come down and do a face-off with him because he projects so much fear. Just in life, when we have obstacles in life, it's not really about the fight. It's about what we fear the outcome of the fight could be. If we knew, or if we could give a guarantee to one of the Israel guys, if we go, if you go down, you will win. We guarantee it. Then maybe one guy would have had, you know, courage enough to step up and say, I'll do it. I'll be the hero. I'll beat him. But because they were afraid, the fight wasn't really about who was the best at swinging a sword. The fight that took place was between Israel and fear. I've noticed in life that the real fight is never against our challenges. The real fight is never against our obstacles. The real fight is never against the things that stands in our way. The real fight is always about our fear of what could happen if we don't manage to succeed. And it paralyzes us. That's why we need to learn how to win the fight before the fight. David shows up. A little teenager is about 16, 15, 16 years old. They say he had fair skin and freckles, and he had like a little red fro. He's like this little tiny little guy. You know, if you want a picture of what he might have looked like, I don't know if you ever been to a holiday, what you buy like a week and you fly away to like Mallorca or Greece or Tenerife or whatever you call it. And there's a certain category of people who always show up at these places. You know them by two very distinctive signs. One is they're drunk at 6 a.m. in the morning. Two is they don't tan. I'm talking about English people. Have you ever seen these English people who, doesn't matter how long they're in the sun, they don't tan. Their freckles come out, they get red, burnt red, and totally wasted, but they never, never tan. They go from like pale white as a dead man to red as a lobster, back to pale again, and they're never brown. They got this reddish little Irish going on thing going on, and freckles pop out everywhere, and you see them and you hear them, and by morning you recognize them because they're already drunk. By night you recognize them because they're really red and drunk, and by the end of the week they look like, man, someone just held up some nuclear in their face, and they're like super red and super a lot of freckles. David, he's like that, this fair-skinned little guy, he comes there, and he's like, what's going on here, guys? Why are you letting him trash talk you like that? You know what is more provoking than being afraid of a big guy? Being called out by a little guy. I was like, what? What? No way. And he says, why are you all so afraid? Why are you standing here? Ain't somebody going to come down and take on this guy? It's not like the Israelites were like, you know, like 50 kilos and looking like small little guys. No, they were big guys too. We don't know. They might have had guys as big as Goliath. But Goliath had one advantage. He had shot so much fear at their direction. So they were terrified, not only afraid of him, but afraid of what he might be able to do to them. See, we need some Davids coming our way and calling us on what hindering us to move forward into that which God has purposed for our lives. And here's the thing about David. It's very fascinating. Before David beat Goliath, Goliath hit everybody with fear. But David could beat Goliath because David had already conquered his fears. And it's interesting when you read about it that, fear is like a magnifying glass. I don't know if you call it that, magnifying glass, who makes things look bigger than they are. You know, when you drive one of those American cars, the object in the mirror might appear bigger than they really are. You know, that's what fear is. It will take a little thing, and fear is a magnifying glass who will cause it to look really, really big. And you be afraid of what you see, not of what it is. See, if we could really see what it is, we wouldn't be that afraid. But because what we think it is, because of what it looks like, it scares us. But here's the thing about David. David's victory over Goliath was only a manifestation of the fact that he had already conquered his fears. You know, David beat Goliath because he had already won over what other people feared, lions and bears and stuff like that. And if we just flip a few verses further on to verse 32, we can read in 1 Samuel 17:32, it goes like this. David said to Saul, "Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine." You know, like this little guy, man, he's saying, "Hey, big boys, don't be afraid." It's provoking. It's like being at school and almost getting into a fight, and your little brother comes and says, "Don't be afraid." You're like, "Man, get out of here, man." No wonder Saul wanted to kill him. "Your servant will go and fight him. I'm not only going to kill him, I'm going to make you all look really, really bad." Saul replied, "You're not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You're only a young man and tall as a beer bottle, and he has been a warrior from his youth." But David said to Saul, "Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it. I struck it. I rescued it. I put on a rear naked choke. And when he tapped, I kept going until he was dead. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it and killed it." Man, who loves sheep that much, man? What's wrong with this guy? I'd be like, "Help yourself, man. You want it rare, medium rare? You want some seasoning on that? And just help yourself, man, Mr. Lion. I don't care. I'll let you have a sheep, man. Your servant has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine," man, he's hitting him where it hurts, "will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine." Saul said to David, "Go and the Lord be with you." You know, the thing is with what Saul is saying there really is, if you've ever been to America, you know, a nice way for a Christian American to tell you're an idiot is to say, "God bless you." "God be with you. God love you. God bless you. Yes, you're an idiot. You know what I mean." That Saul's really saying, "May the Lord be with you, idiot. If you want to go get yourself killed, just go ahead. The Lord be with you," you know? That's really what happens. But David, he's having none of this. See, David, he had already taken on a lion. David had already faced his fear when the lion came. It wasn't about the sheep, it was about whose sheep it was. It was his father's sheep, and he was not about to let anything happen to the sheep, not because he loved sheep, but because he honored his father. So when he stood in front of the lions, he was ready to step up and face not only the lion, but facing his fear. And the interesting thing is it seems like once you've handled your fears once and for all, it stays with you for the rest of your life. So when he's walking into Goliath, he is not afraid of him because he faced that fear when the first lion came. Some people, they keep running from the lions all their lives, and they're never facing their fears. You know, some people who've been left in the relationship after relationship, maybe you've been hurt in the relationship and you're in the relationship now and you're thinking about ending it just so the other person won't get the opportunity to hurt you again, like everybody else has done. Instead of facing the lion and the fears, we run from it. Maybe you're in marriage and you're going to a rough time. Instead of facing your fear of becoming vulnerable and going to God and humbling yourself together, instead of facing the giants and the lions, you're looking for an easy way out. See, David, he was a young man, but he wasn't looking for an easy way out. And he had the courage of God in him, so he stood up against that lion. That's why he could stand up in front of Goliath and say, "I'm not afraid of you. You're all talk and no bite. I got a little dog. He's about this big." Well, about this big. Eric, our worship pastor, man, he's mad scared for dogs. Man, he's crazy. He's paranoid. Man, I got this little thing, man. He's like 5 kilos. It's all bark and no bite. Man, this thing has pinned Eric against the wall so many times. It's the funniest thing you ever see, man. So awesome things, like it was a big Rottweiler, you know? And this little dog can do anything to him. He could just kick it away and he'll die, you know? Like, it's so little. Well, he shouldn't, because then I'll kill him. But it's the fear of what little Spike could do to him. It makes him like this against the wall. And this little thing, he stands like this. If he just faced his fear and one did, whoa, that dog would run and hide somewhere and pee himself. You know, it would be over with it. But life is like that. If we never face our fears, we will keep running from giants. And I just want to give you a few little tips on how you can overcome fear, how you can win the fight before the fight and break up with fear. I told the other service, you know, like, I know Pastor Gary preaches here and he's the most structured man I know, and he got points and thoughts and scripture. So I threw some points together during the last sermon I did here. So if you feel like I need points to feel like I had a real message, here's some points for you. If you don't like points, they're not really points, but they're points for the point people who like points. All right. So whether you like points or not, here's one that you could use as a point. Let's say this is a point. Point number one. You ready for a point? That's really not a point, but it's a good thing. What's the point of all this? Point number one. Fear will paralyze you. See, fear can't really hurt you. Fear will cause an effect in your life that can't hurt you. Fear will paralyze you. I grew up in a home that was very broken. My dad was an alcoholic, and as long as I can remember, there were fighting, there were violence, there were alcohol, there were mess in my life in our home. And I remember our dad left us on Christmas Day when I was 12, and we didn't see him for a few years. He kind of left his family and took off with another woman. And praise God, now God has healed him and he's restored and we're all good. But at that point, you know, it was tough. And I could be somewhere playing with a friend or at a friend's house and the telephone could ring and it'd be my little sister. I have two brothers and two sisters. And it could be my little sister saying, Andres, you got to get home. It is chaos. Dad is mad. He's going crazy. Dad is drunk, man. It's. I'm scared. You got to get back home. And I would get on my little bike and I would rush back home. And I'll try, you know, be a man and stand up and you know, like protect my brothers and sisters. And that happened so many times that I actually developed a fear of the telephone ring. And every time the phone started to ring, my blood froze to ice. And I would just go, ooh, what's wrong? Because fear does that to us. It paralyzes us. I would freeze. Doesn't matter what I was doing, I would freeze. Do you know, I caught myself last week. Just last week in the office, we're having a meeting and we're talking about stuff and I'm very engaged in it. I'm very passionate about what we're talking about. I'm actually a little bit frustrated and a little bit angry, and it's an intense meeting. And all of a sudden the phone rings and I just freeze to ice for a second. No, I know, logically, I know that it can't be anything wrong because everything is good. But you know, like 28 years later, 30 years later, it still sticks with me. I've overcome it, but it's trying to get back at me because fear will paralyze us. Fear of losing will keep us standing still and stop moving forward. So the devil, he can't hinder you, but he will try to paralyze you so you make a decision to freeze. Fear always paralyzes you. That's why we need to break up with fear. The real fight is not against our challenges, but the real fight is against our fear of not being able to handle it or overcome it or beat it. That's why we have to overcome our fear, because when we overcome our fear, we will overcome our challenges, because fear is false evidence appearing real, and it's a magnifying glass making things look way bigger than they really are. When we bust the bubble and when we pinch the balloon and make it crack and make it blow up, we realize that it's like when we get to heaven. Some people are so scared of the devil, but when you get to heaven, you got to find out that he was a little mouse with a big sound system making a lot of noise. And you go like, man, that's it? That's who scared me? That's who hindered me from my calling? That's who held me back in life? That's the one who tried to scare me? That's the one who put all that fear in my life? Man, if you break up with fear, the devil can paralyze you, and nothing in this world can hold you back from living the God-given life that Jesus died so you can have. The second point, which let's say it's a point, is fear made everybody fantasize about what could happen. So when the Israelites were standing there, They start to fantasize about what could happen if I step up to Goliath. That's what fear does. Fear is a fiction movie playing out in our heads that does not exist. You think about something you're scared of that could happen. You're in an airplane, it starts bumping. What are you thinking about? I wonder how long it's gonna bump. No, what are you afraid of? You're afraid of what could possibly happen. If you're scared of flying, you're afraid of what could possibly happen. Fear is a fiction movie playing out in our head that does not exist. You know, what's real is that Jesus says, I'll never leave you, I'll never forsake you. But the devil, he's like this filmmaker. He's like this Steven Spielberg of negativity playing out stuff in your head. And if you're like me, you know, I got a wild imagination. I got like voices going on all the time. Like even right now, there's like voices in here. There's images playing. There's videos going on. It's crazy. It's mayhem in here. you feel me? You're like that. You know, like, and then something happens and you go like straight into a horror movie. It's like, boom. Oh yeah, it's HD, 3D. It's everything. Yes, it's real. What happens is something that is fiction seems real. It's like I got two daughters, they're 10 and 7, and sometimes the youngest one is screaming at night, and I'll run in there, I go, what's wrong, baby? And she goes, there's a monster in my room. And if I say, no, it's not, she'll get mad at me, and that's worse than being afraid for monsters. So I say, really? Yes. I said, what are we gonna do? And she says, Daddy, turn on the light. And I said, all right. And I turn on the light, and it turns out there's no monsters in the room. Because there are no monsters in this world. It's a fiction playing out in our head. But once we flick the light on, we realize that it's all a big fat lie based on fear. That is why fear would cause you to fantasize about things that does not exist. You know, I was driving Pastor Gary a few years ago in Stockholm. I was going to take him to the airport. When I came back from America, I lived there for 5 years in 2001 or something like that. I came back from America and I had an infection in my heart and I had to go to the hospital. I was there for a few weeks and they hated me at that hospital. I came from America, the land of great service, to Sweden where no one knows what service is. It's a very fine socialistic country, and which is, if you, it is what it is. And had this red button, and I noticed when I pushed that, nurses come running. Oh, that's awesome, man. What a system. It's great, man. And I pushed that thing. Can I have a coffee, please? And they're like, that's why you pushed that button? I said, yes. And they came back, gave me a first aid, gave me a coffee. Later on the night, I pushed that button again. They come back, and what's wrong? I said, can I have a couple of sandwiches, please? The guy, you go make your own sandwiches. I said, I'm hooked up to all this stuff. Man, where am I going to go? Turned out that was not an ordering button. That was an emergency button. And they weren't too happy with me. So I had this heart condition. So ever since then, I was a little bit afraid maybe something could happen to my heart. And I was driving Gary, and I was so scared that something was going to happen to my heart, because this day when I was driving him, I felt like this pressure on my chest. I was really tired. I've been pushing really hard. I was almost at a place of burnout. And I just felt this pain chest, and I didn't know what it was, and my hands were really, really cold, and I was, you know, I was trying to get the blood flowing in my hands. So I kept banging them and rubbing them on my legs and just trying to get them going, and they just get bluer and more blue, and I was terrified. I'm thinking, I'm going to kill Pastor Gary. I'm going to have a heart attack. I am going to be the one who sent the apostle of Europe back to heaven way too early. I think this is not going to be good, man. Yeah, I can't kill Pastor Gary. I mean, I'm a little bit scared of him, but I can't kill him, you know. Like, I was like, I don't know what, I got to get him to the airport safe, and then I need help. I might die, you know, like I'm having a heart attack. I get Gary to the airport. We don't talk at all in the car, which is really cool hanging out with Gary, because, or any guy, by the way, you can be in the same car. You don't have to talk. You're all cool. There's nothing wrong. You know, like me and my wife, we talk a lot and we do that stuff, but Gary's cool, man. We can just sit there quiet, me and him. And my wife's cool as well, but you know, if I'm quiet for like 30 seconds, my wife goes, what's wrong? Oh, nothing. Everything's perfect. We're quiet. You're like, it's great, man. Okay, let's fix that, she says, and start talking. And so I'm dropping Gary at the airport. I'm rushing back to the hospital. Like, I'm a little bit of a drama queen, my wife tells me. I don't know how she can think. I'm a little bit, like, I can be a little bit dramatic. Like, I'm speeding. I'm flooring my car. I'm driving as fast as I can. I'm crossing cars. I'm driving not to the parking lot of the emergency hospital. I'm driving straight into the ambulances where they come in. And I rush in there. I run out of my car. I run into the ER, you know, emergency room. And I scream, I'm having a heart attack! And I get everybody's attention. They rush here. They get me on a stretcher. They rope me and they hook me up to EKGs and machines. And they're more nurses and doctors than I've seen in my life working on me. And I'm thinking, whoo, man, finally, I'm thinking I'm going to die, man. I'm going to die for Christ. I worked so hard. My heart is giving up. I'm a martyr for Jesus. It's going to be Peter, Paul, and Andreas in heaven. I gave every last breath to building his kingdom. But here's where it's in. My doctor says, we can't find nothing wrong with you. I said, what are you talking about? I'm dying here, man. There's nothing wrong with you. I said, keep looking. Look at my hands. They're blue. And they say, yeah, that's very weird. We can't figure out why your hands are so blue because there's nothing wrong with your heart. It's perfectly actually in good shape. Look, thank you. But my heart's really bad. And he says, we got to go out and have a little conference, the doctor said, and trying to figure out what's going on. I said, all right, don't be long. I'm dying in here, man. I'll be dead when you come back. You don't get out there too long. You come back and you're going to have to bury me and I'll be dead and you don't leave me here. I'm about to die and you come in and fix me. And they go, yeah, you'll be all right. Just stay in there. And I'm laying there and I'm thinking, I got to go to the bathroom. So I go to the bathroom and my mama raised me right. So when I'm done at the bathroom, I wash my hands and all of a sudden I see all this blue stuff in the sink and all the blue stuff is starting to come up my hands. And I realized I had brand new blue jeans. And the more I was trying to get my hands going, the more blue my hands were getting. And man, I was so embarrassed. There was nothing wrong with me at all. I just got myself going. That's what fear does. And here's what I did. I opened the window and I jumped out a window and I snuck around, took my car and I drove home. And it doesn't matter how sick I get, I'm never getting back to that hospital in my life. I'm embarrassed for life. They got like pictures on the wall with me saying, if he says he's sick, don't treat him. He's a liar. Feeling a little bit cold, but I think I'm gonna be all right. If I die here, would you tell my wife I did it preaching? He gave everything he had. See, fear's like that. Fear is a fiction movie playing out in your head that does not exist. Whether you apply it to your relationships, your finances, your past, your future, it's based on lies. Fear is based on lies. Holy Spirit can help you expose the lie, help you flick on the light and show you there's no monsters in your life. There's a few in your head, but they leave as soon as you apply promises to your life. I have a daughter, Angelina. She's 7. She was born with a heart condition. I think I've told you about her. We handed her to surgery once, and she was 4 months old. She was going to have a heart surgery, and we kissed her, and we prayed for her, and we cried over her because the doctor said, you got to say goodbye because she's going to have an 8-hour-long open heart surgery. They're going to try to build a new wall in her heart. Her heart was like 2 centimeters, And the doctor tells us, you know, we're going to call you after the surgery. The surgery is going to be about 8 hours. And I'm walking around. Man, it's a long time. And my wife's stronger than me. And I'm saying, babe, what are we going to do? What if this doesn't end right? We got to get ready for 2 scenarios here. And the longer the time goes, the less safe I feel. And by the end of 8 hours, I'm like, I'm a wreck, man. I'm thinking, man, this is not good. And then all of a sudden, the doctor calls and he goes, Mr. Nielsen, would you please come to the hospital? And I go, how did he go? And he says, we'll tell you when you get here. I said, why? I said, my wife, that's not good, man. If that was great news, he would just say, it's great news. Now, like all of a sudden, this movie's playing again. I'm seeing like I've seen in movies. I'm thinking, we're going to get to the hospital. The doctor's going to be there. He's going to come out and say, we did everything we could. The nurse is going to be there. The priest is going to be there. The pope is going to be there. The therapist is going to be there. Everybody's going to be there. That's why they want us to come. They want to handle us and take care of us. And I come running in and I grab the doctor's this silhouette thing they have, whatever it's called, like cloak. I grab it and I said, how did it go? I'm ready for a meltdown. And he says, we couldn't be more happy with the result. It's gone fantastic, better than we hoped for. And I go, why did you not tell me? And he says, because it's policy, we only talk face to face. He said, fear is a liar. Fear will take you places that you shouldn't be. You need to break up with fear. See, the thing with breaking up with fear is David Once he killed Goliath, by the way, he's pretty full on. He didn't only kill him. He went up and took his sword and chopped his head on and rode around. The whole country showed up. Like he's following the lions and he's riding around parading ahead. Like he's crazy. But once he killed Goliath, what happened was the whole Israel army started to attack the Philistines and won. Easy. One man's faith broke the fear of a whole nation. When you break the fear in your life, you give other people permission to do the same. I wonder if it's anyone in this room who are willing to stand up in your life and say, I'm gonna break the fear in my life so I can give other permission to do the same in their life. If it's anything we need in our day and age, if it's anything we need in Europe after all the stupid and the tragic stuff that is going on in Paris and anywhere else that where they're trying to hit us with fear. If it's anything we need is people standing up saying, I've broken up with fear. I used to live under it, but now I rule it. I am not bound to it. I'm not going to be dictated by it. And I'm going to stand up and I'm going to give you the permission to live free from fear and not ruled by fear. One man's faith set the whole nation free from fear. It only takes one person in a setting to stand up and show the way. And we, the Church of Jesus Christ, and here in London Hillsong, we have the opportunity in a broken and in a lost world to stand up and say, you don't have to bow to fear. And to stand up and show that greater is he that is in me than he who is in this world. We can stand up and show this world that the same power who raised Christ from dead lives in me. Same power who went down in hell and lifted Jesus from hell back to the grave when he went down for the keys of the kingdom. Same power who raised him from the grave. Same power who elevated him up to the right-hand side of the Father and keep him there. That same power lives in you and is mightily at work in your life. Ain't no devil in hell and no demon or no fear who can hinder that power or hold you back. You were created to be awesome. You might not feel awesome. I don't feel awesome, but God is awesome and everything he creates is awesome. Therefore, you is awesome. And I'm here to give you permission to be awesome. I'm here to give you permission to break up with fear and start living the life you would if you had no fear. Come on, let's stand up together, everybody. Here's the thing with David. We're gonna sing a song in just a second. Just stay with me. David did not have fear in his life because he was full of worship. I've realized that fear and worship cannot coexist in the same heart. You're either going to be dominated by fear or your heart is going to be dominated by worship. See, David, he was out in the countryside with his harp singing songs to God. Man, his heart was full of worship. He had a big God. He had worshiped God, so God had become big in his life. God in his life was bigger than the fear of other people and the fear of challenges and Goliath and giants and all that stuff. See, the way out of fear is to walk into worship. I mean, it's the best antidote for fear that you ever can take. It's the best pill. It's the best medicine. If you say, Andres, I need to break out with fear, I'm going to help you right now. We're going to worship. Because when you worship with all your heart and all your mind, fear cannot stay in your thoughts. Fear cannot stay in your heart. So come on, can we worship together? And you say, Andres, I have no fear. Well, why don't you stand up and give other permission to break out with fear? If you feel comfortable, would you lift up your hands in this room? All the way up on balcony, from my left to my right, all across this room, come on. Let's lift up a mighty worship that drives out all the fear from the Dominion Theater, from every heart and mind right now. Come on, everybody.
This is the end of this podcast. We hope